A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 153. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about Undermined. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, Undermined, a strange and perhaps forgotten series from ABC Weekend Television from 1965, broadcast on the ITV network. We have 11 60-minute episodes, all in black and white, for us to talk about. And it's a bit of an obscure one, Brian.
Yes, it is, isn't it? ABC was a British production company that produced programs for ITV broadcast at that point, correct?
That's right, yes.
So, yes, this was a very stylish sort of conspiracy thriller that with developing science fiction ideas through the course of the show that had a variety of interesting writers and interesting direction on it and sort of an interesting developing story to it.
And yes, it certainly does. It's a story that does develop as it goes along. It's a slow and sort of strange build, really.
Yes, absolutely. So, getting into the setup of this show, Drew Harriet returns from working abroad for a little while and learns that his brother, who is a police officer, is behaving rather strangely. And he looks into this with his brother's wife, who is also noticing some odd things going on. And they start to discover that a number of important figures and people in sort of positions like being in the police appear to have been brainwashed and to be acting in sort of strange ways and don't seem to be quite themselves.
That's right. Yes, it is rather peculiar. There's some strange behavior going on, as you say, from Drew's brother and then from several other people. And is this strange behavior linked to some unusual sounds which may be heard on phones or on recordings? What's going on? And we have, as you say, Drew Harriet and his sister-in-law then sort of forming a team, and they'll be joined by a scientist who's also a science fiction writer and whose own ideas might reveal some of what's going on in this slow build-up and strange sort of plot that develops.
Yes, absolutely. There is something quite spooky in people being controlled or acting on instructions or doing something that is rather different than strange. So it's interesting to see how things build up there.
Okay, let's list these characters that we're talking about. We've already mentioned Drew Harriet, played by Jeremy Wilkin, an actor who has been in Doctor Who, Blake Seven. He was the voice of Virgil Tracy in Thunderbirds, and I think he also did voices for Captain Scarlet, so he had an association with the Gerry Anderson team. He plays, as you say, Drew Harriet, a personnel officer whose work often takes him abroad. And as you say, at the start of the first episode, he's returned home to find things have changed somewhat.
Yes, absolutely. I believe Jeremy Wilkin was Captain Oker in Captain Scarlet, who turns up from time to time in that show.
Right. Good stuff.
Anne Harriet is Drew Harriet's sister-in-law, played by Rosemary Nichols, who was best known for Department S. And she is sort of his co-conspirator trying to figure out what is going on with these different people and these sort of strange conspiratorial kind of things that are happening. And they're trying to figure out what's going on and what these outside influences are and how they're affecting things. We also have another Harriet, Frank Harriet, played by Jeremy Kemp, and he is Drew's brother and Harriet's husband. And he appears to have been brainwashed and is definitely acting for someone else, someone on the outside. And this is sort of the intrigue that's starting to build up, is who are these people working for and sort of what's going on there. And Frank Herriot doesn't last very long. He's really only in the first episode, but he's definitely a sort of pivotal character in how things develop.
Yes. I mean, without giving too much away, at the end of the first episode, we'll have the team of Drew and Anne basically carrying on to investigate what happened to Anne's husband, Drew's brother, and the mystery of these other people that are involved. And Jeremy Kemp, a very familiar face on British TV in the 60s and 70s and even in the 80s. I saw him recently in one of the Jeremy Brett Sherlock Holmes episodes. So you're a very familiar actor.
Oh, yes.
And another very, very familiar actor, Dennis Quilley, who turns up as this strange sort of combination of scientist and science fiction writer, Professor Val Randolph, quite a light-hearted chap. But he joins their team, certainly in the early episodes, and sort of becomes involved in the investigation of these strange behaviours and possibly this strange broadcast noise which seems to be causing it.
Yes, he's sort of the helper, you know, the third person on the team who does the extra bits of research and helps them out from time to time.
Yes, he gives them, as you say, that sort of science knowledge and background information, while Drew is the sort of lead investigator and Anne is often goes undercover, it seems, in most episodes.
In a number of them, yes. Dennis Quilley, of course, is familiar to us from Timeslip for his very memorable role there.
Absolutely, yes. And also from Timeslip and from Doomwatch, we have John Barron, yet again playing a ministerial figure, Sir Geoffrey Tillinger. And he'll become more important towards the end of this series when his character shows up. But again, he's very sort of like tall, authoritarian figure and a good actor who's been in several shows.
Yes, he definitely plays these authority figures a lot, but he is quite good at adding a little something more interesting to them and varying them a little more than just being generic authority figures. So it's always nice to see him there. So we have this conspiracy that the main characters are pursuing and trying to understand. And in a number of episodes, we have Drew and Anne and Professor Randolph investigating a significant figure who appears to be working as part of this conspiracy and appears to be doing things based on this sort of outside influence that we don't really understand. And they are trying to find the truth behind this broadcast signal, which appears that maybe it's the cause or the method that is affecting these sort of key members of society and these various people who start acting on behalf of this outside influence.
Okay, that's right. We've got these 11 episodes, which in themselves are standalone episodes. So each one is a sort of self-contained story, but they slowly build up. And it's quite interesting how slow the build is in this series to sort of reveal what's going on and the terrible truth. By the time we get to the fourth episode, the characters themselves in the show are starting to refer to the brainwashed suspects as the Undermind. And I suppose there's an interesting little play on words there going on with the title of this show. But it is, you know, it does build up. They stand alone each episode, but the story and the plot slowly reveals itself, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. That's right. And at times, the conspiracy or Undermind seems to be working directly against them and trying to thwart what Drew and Anne and sometimes others are doing. In one of the early episodes, Drew is framed for murder, for murdering a call girl. So you have those kinds of direct actions against them by Undermind, and also sort of more general things where Undermind is trying to cause problems in society and politics and so on, which sort of builds up and does some interesting things, but they tend to work quite well as little standalone episodes as well.
Okay, all very interesting stuff.
Yes, that's right. Mr. Drew, Harriet. I don't think I know you, do I? Your name has come up in an inquiry we're making.
Oui. Police.
You're expecting a visit from the police?
No, of course not.
What is this inquiry? It isn't something we can discuss here. We're not going anywhere till we know something about it. Quite simple, Mr. Harriet. There is an inquiry. Your name is involved. I thought you'd like to keep it cleared up.
We turn to our production notes about this show, and we mentioned already ATV Weekend Television, a TV production company who were in fact the TV production arm of a British cinema chain, and one of the cinema chains that in the 60s was reacting to the spread of television by getting into TV production themselves, on the basis that I suppose if they couldn't beat them, they could join them.
There was quite an alphabet soup of different production companies and broadcast companies on the ITV side at this point. There were all of these different companies between ITV and ATV and ABC and a bunch of others that weren't involved in this case, but there are so many of these that were in there on the commercial ITV television in the 60s and 70s for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, lots of them, and all over the alphabet. So this show was created and script edited by Robert Banks Stewart. And that's a name you may well know from British genre television, because he has he wrote for The Avengers, for Danger Man, and of course for Doctor Who in the Fourth Doctor period. He wrote Terror of the Zygons, created the Zygons, I suppose, then, Brian, which we know are shortly to return to our screens, we believe.
That's right.
And he also wrote The Seeds of Doom. So he's quite a well-known genre writer.
That's right. He was actually going to be writing a further Doctor Who story and sort of left that when he got a big position with writing for ITV. So he certainly bounced around and did a lot of interesting things at that point on British television. There were a number of other writers involved, including David Whittaker and Bill Strutton, and of course Robert Holmes, who wrote sort of the tail end, the final episodes of Undermind. And of course, he's very well known for a lot of Doctor Who work, and he is in many cases considered to be the best writer that Doctor Who has had.
Yeah, interesting stuff to see him on this show as well, yes.
And they had a number of different directors working on it, so it did give you a sort of standalone feel that these were sort of separate episodes. And as you watch it sort of at the beginning, it isn't quite clear that there really is going to be this ongoing story element, but that definitely comes into it.
Okay, and there is some interesting stuff in the direction, particularly I think in the first couple of episodes, I think most notably in the first episode, where they do some quite odd camera angles, and often with characters filmed from below to emphasize this sort of strange, slightly surreal atmosphere of the show in the early episodes. And I noticed, Brian, that there's sort of they did quite make something of the black and white. So there would often be these offices with checkerboard ceilings or walls, which again adds to this sort of strange sort of feeling of the filming.
Yes, this was a black and white show, of course, and they definitely used that and used it well. You know, they knew they were working for black and white, and they took advantage of that.
Yeah, some of it settles down in the later episodes, but early on, it's got a very sort of strange 60s feel, sort of almost paranoid feel to it, and that goes with this weird story that they're slowly building up. We've got it filmed on videotape, have to say that the surviving quality does vary occasionally because of that, and we do get some crackling on the sound and occasional picture quality places, but I guess that's what we will have to expect from video from the 60s.
Yes, and this won't have the type of restoration that we get on things like Doctor Who or Quatermass, where there's really the demand to do a more expensive DVD project. But what we get is not always the best in video quality, but it's quite watchable, I think. And we have some rather spooky theme music by TV composer Paul Lewis, who was, I think, 22 at the time, so quite early for him. But some nice stuff there. And the opening title sequence used these black and white images that were stretched and distorted images of faces and sort of things moving around and sort of set things up storyline-wise, but did some interesting and very distorted kind of things that helped with the feel and the context it was setting up for this show.
Yes, it is. It is quite another one of these weird and distinctive title sequences with the images and the music, so it all put together quite nicely.
Yeah, it sets the tone well.
It does. As well as the lead actors, you'll also see a host of familiar TV faces, again from 60s and 70s British TV. So you might spot up front Patrick Allen, David Kelly or Derek Nimmo. And of course, you may spot some familiar faces from Doctor Who, such as George Baker, Michael Goff, Peter Barkworth, and if you look very carefully in the penultimate episode, a blink and you'll miss it early appearance by John Levine, who of course went on to play Sergeant Benton in the 70s.
Yes, at this point he was mostly doing non-speaking roles and extra parts and that sort of thing. But seeing people like Michael Goff and George Baker show up in pretty memorable roles, that was good stuff. They were very good.
Okay. Sadly, one of the 1960s shows we watched that Patrick Troughton wasn't in, it seems.
That's true, yes.
It had a 60-minute late evening time slot on ITV, and with the commercials, that brings the actual running time of these shows down to about 50 minutes, I think. And as I say, it must have been a late evening show because it does deal with some quite adult themes at times, particularly with the episode about the murder of the call girl, where it doesn't really hold back on what the escort agency is up to or so on. So it's quite sort of daring stuff for the 60s.
Yes, and they get into, as they develop some of the ideas of influence and sort of mind control and things, it gets into some reasonably dark and intense kinds of things there, I think.
And that's it, really. It's 1965, it was broadcast, and apart from that, Brian...
Yeah, it was broadcast in the 60s, and it's had this one DVD release, and not a whole lot outside of that.
And finding information about it has been tricky, in fact, and as ever, if you know more about this show, we'd be delighted to hear from you.
Yes, we were able to watch it on DVD, but very little has been written about this. And I'm not aware of any other broadcasts or releases apart from the original 1965 broadcast on ITV and this one DVD release.
So let's talk about the DVD and the availability. Region 2 DVD released in July 2012. By Network DVDs, the company, who specialise in putting out some of these classic British TV series. But we just get the 11 episodes. There's no extras. There's just some episode notes on the sleeve liner. Sadly, there's no notes or production notes or viewing notes booklet by the TV historian Andrew Pixley, which is a great shame. Fairly reasonable to get hold of at the moment. £17 on Amazon it's currently going for, but sadly not up on Love Film or iTunes at the moment, as far as I know.
That's right. And of course, there is no Region 1 release. If you're in North America, you'll have to import the Region 2 and find a way of playing that. I believe the opening and closing title sequences are on YouTube, but that's about it, right?
Yes, I think that's it. There's no episodes up on YouTube at the moment, but if you do anything, do go along to YouTube and look at the opening and closing sequences, because they are quite weird and strange in their black and white way. They're quite memorable and they're worth a look.
Yes, absolutely. Some good direction in a lot of places on this show, and those title sequences are definitely in there with that.
They might intrigue you to take another look, or to take a look at this particular series we're talking about.
Indeed. So next time, we will talk about the science fiction elements that creep into this story more and more and become a bigger and bigger part as the episodes go on.
We're going to talk a little bit about the 1960s and how Undermine fits in with the other sort of paranoid conspiracy shows that that era seemed to produce.
Oh yes, there's lots of interesting stuff there, so we'll have to talk about that.
Of course, we'll talk about our own feelings about the good and the bad of this particular show and give you our review and recommendations.
There will be some good things to talk about next time, for sure.
And as we say, if you know any more about this show, please do chip in.
Please do. So you can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at britishinvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to thegeekculturenetwork.com, you can find us there. And we have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there as well.
And you'll find us on vognetwork.com, which is the Voice of Geeks Network, internet streaming radio. We have a slot there on a Monday evening, but you can also find our other episodes up there. And as ever, if you've joined us from Vogue Network, welcome aboard.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much indeed, and until next time, this is Eamon in England, also signing off.